This is Ian Dayborn, Cambridge 105 Radio.
So I'm joined by Nick Sayer with his microphone now pointing at him. Welcome, Nick, to the Cambridge 105.
Thank you very much, Ian. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. And you're from Woodfine Solicitors, our friends at Woodfine. Are you in the Cambridge office?
I am indeed, yes, although my work takes me across other offices and indeed throughout the country.
Yeah, because Woodfine, you're quite a big firm these days, aren't you? I think because you were originally Woodfine Bachelor, is that right? Or Bachelor, if I remember rightly.
Going back into the mists of time, yes, but we're now Cambridge, Milton Keynes, Bedford, Sandy.
Yeah, and I think that's, in the sort of legal world, the days of the kind of little high street lawyer, they're still around, but most firms now that are sort of out there tend to be a bit larger, don't they?
That's absolutely right. And of course, over the years, there's been a drive to more and more specialisation. So, you know, the days of the high street lawyer who does a bit of everything are long since passed, and specialisation is very much the name of the game.
And specialisation is exactly what you're in to talk about, because you've written a very interesting piece, actually, if you're listening, you want to read the item that Nick has written and he's going to talk about, expand on this morning. It's in this week's Cambridge Independent. Nick specialises in employment law. And we should say, at kick-off, we're not particularly here to talk about, you know, unfair dismissal and that kind of thing, are we? You've got a particular area that you would like to focus on. So tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, that's right, Ian. I mean, I do deal with unfair dismissal and all things employment tribunal related, but my real specialism within my overall specialism of employment is business protection. So what I mean by that is enforcing of post-termination restrictions, which we're going to talk about in more detail, obligations of confidentiality. So, for example, someone sticks a memory stick in the back of a laptop on the last day of employment and makes off the customer list, team moves, those sort of things.
So tell us about that. Say I'm a businessman, I've set up a company or I've been running a company for a while. In your line of business, what are the common errors that people make in terms of not protecting their business as well as they could do?
The first thing is either not having properly drafted contracts of employment in place at all, which afford means of post-termination protection, or having things in place which are not well thought through and which, when they're put under the microscope, don't stand up.
And what does, in practical terms, what does that mean? People who have not thought these things through, somebody leaves them. What kind of things can that person leaving a business take with them that the employer, the former employer, hasn't really got a leg to stand on in terms of defending?
I mean,
protecting.
There could be a number of things, Ian. So, for example, if it's let's say and put it in perhaps a Cambridge context, if it's your head of R&D, they may be privy to true trade secrets, confidential information, that may be capable of being walked out the door without proper protection, although the law will at least provide some implied terms which can be relied on in that context post-termination in relation to protection of true trade secrets and confidential information. But the other things are the customer base and also, particularly for dealing with a team move scenario, the stability of the workforce. So one employee leaves and takes others with them.
And would you say in this city, this great city that we're part of, Cambridge, we're right at the cutting edge with technology. People do go move around different companies. There are UK-based businesses. There are also overseas businesses that are willing to pay, I would imagine, large sums of money to do something you've just described, and that is take a team across from one business to another. In Cambridge, is this a particular issue, would you say?
It's an issue throughout the UK, but obviously with the thriving high-tech environment that we have here, certainly there is perhaps a more sort of fertile landscape, if I can put it that way, for things like this to come to pass.
And so the devil is in the details, I suppose it is with any contract, really. It's all about what you're bringing to the table in terms of expertise, is knowledge of where the pitfalls are and the ways that you can word that contract to give somebody maximum protection against this kind of thing happening to them.
Absolutely right. And one of the classic pitfalls is, let's say, you have a non-competition restriction, so a restriction that prevents the ex-employee from working for a competitor for a period of time within a particular area, or that's what it should say.
Yes.
But quite often I see restrictions of that type, which don't have any area defined. So what that will mean is that the courts, if they come to look at that, would say, well, this must be implied to apply worldwide. And so you can imagine that trying to make a restriction of, say, 6 or 12 months with a worldwide ambit, with a worldwide reach, stick, is a very tall, if not a nigh impossible order.
Yeah, it sounds. It is a minefield, isn't it? And tell me something else. We've talked a little bit about how you work with businesses to protect them against this kind of thing in terms of how you draft the contracts, how you word the contracts. Do you ever work, as it were, on the other side of the fence for
yes,
people
I
who
do.
Have left a company
yes,
and maybe the company are coming after them and saying you can't do this? And then you're sort of putting on your other hat and looking at actually where maybe the contract that they've signed wasn't as well written as it could have been.
Yeah, that's right. So quite often I'm acting for senior managers, you know, director level employees who will ordinarily have an array of those sort of restrictions. Sometimes as well acting for the new employer, or indeed perhaps the new employer and there would be new recruits, and looking to find ways to get out of the covenants, get out of the restrictions.
And is that so? That's interesting. So in this world, and I suspect this is a slightly more higher power world than I operate in, but if a business is looking to employ someone, there's almost like when a business gets sold, you go through a due diligence process. Is it common, I guess, when hiring senior people to go through a process where before it, actually anybody gets offered a job, in great confidence, presumably, you have to look at their current contract of employment to see if the job that the new employer wants them to do, if they're going to be able to do it. Do you do some of that kind of thing?
I do indeed. And what you tend to see, particularly in senior level contracts that are well drafted, that sometimes there's an obligation that says you will show any would-be new employer these restrictions.
Right.
And the thinking there is that if a new employer induces or procures the departing employee to breach the restrictions or conspires with them to do that, that's a tort, that's a civil wrong, so the new employer can be sued as well.
And do you tend to find that these sorts of things, are we talking here about senior management and board level appointments, or actually if somebody's in a middle management role, do they need to be a bit careful because this could equally affect them?
Yeah, sometimes it's middle management, sometimes it's your sales representative.
Yes, I guess
example.
Sales is, the example I thought, because I work in sales.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hairdressers too, and a lot of the older cases in this area, this area of law as opposed to Cambridge, involve hairdressers moving around from one salon to another.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
it's something that's capable of applying across all business sectors, and of course lawyers ordinarily have restrictions on them as well in their contracts.
I guess they would do, yeah. So do you have any, I'm not going to ask you to name names, do you have any hairdressers on your books?
We do.
Okay, so you've got very nice hair, Nick.
It's probably in need of a cut at the moment. I'll be putting that right tomorrow.
Well, how about that? We've gone from talking about contracts to talking about your hair. That's quite a... just in conclusion, it's a fascinating subject, but if somebody is listening to this and either they're working in a business at maybe senior level, they're looking to move, or maybe they're setting up a company and they're starting to employ people or bring in salespeople, they want to get in contact with you and have a discussion about this. Presumably, what would you offer? An initial sort of exploratory discussion, as it were, and then from there decide what happens next?
That's right. The way these things tend to map out, though, is quite detailed discussions tend to be needed.
Right.
Because there's a lot to explain in terms of, you know, what might happen. So if you're the ex-employee or the employee's looking to depart, or the new employer who's looking to employ, you need to understand in quite lurid detail what happens if the wheels do come off the bus. And I can say very briefly that, you know, if the wheels come off the bus, it's very costly, and the remedy will be an injunction order, usually sought in the High Court in London. And if you breach the terms of an injunction order, that's a contempt of court, so people can be imprisoned. And I have made applications of that kind in the past when people haven't obeyed what they should have obeyed.
Yeah, so the bottom line here is get proper legal advice.
Get proper advice, yeah, and take it at an early stage, because sometimes you can't turn back time.
Okay, well, listen, Nick, it's fascinating to hear. That's Nick Sayer from Woodfines. You can read more about this in the Cambridge Independent this week. You can read Nick's article. You can see a picture of him and admire his hairstyle there.
And the moustache.
And the moustache, that's right. And if people want to get in contact with you, how do they call you? What's the best number to call?
Office number 01223 411 421 is probably the best.
OK. All right. Well, listen, Nick, thank you very much indeed for coming in. Nice
thank
to meet
you, Ian.
You.
Pleasure.